Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. Inspiring stories that change lives. Where ordinary heroes tell their extraordinary stories of how they have triumphed over unexpected challenges. This is where we say what can't be said and use the AAA formula for freedom. Awareness, acceptance, and action. Now, here's your host, Hillary Burns.
Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary Show. I am so excited today. And first, I want to tell you that we are sponsored by Kikori. You'll see an ad for them at the halftime show. And today, I am here with Jocelyn Herman Secchio, who I have known for, oh my God, it's scary to think, over 30 years, I think, something like that. And she doesn't know I'm going to say this, but when I used to know Jocelyn, we were participating in the same transformational programs, she was like my idol. And she was always so well-dressed and so poised. I mean, I was new. I was probably crying all the time and just, you know, like trying to get okay with myself. And there she was, so poised, always dressed nicely. She wore high heels and she just had so much confidence that I was like, wow, I want to be like her when I grow up. So I'm thrilled to have Jocelyn Herman Secchio here. Let's see, just a little bit about her. She spent over 30 years as an entrepreneur, author, coach, course leader, and curriculum designer of transformative programs. And she's going to tell us, there's so much more to her. She's going to tell you more about it later. She is also a former pop singer and songwriter, and I just want to let her tell the rest of the story. Her story is incredible. In the second half, she's going to tell us about what she's doing now and where you can go to participate with her free, some of her free stuff. But meanwhile, I just want to introduce her and have you see her, the beautiful Jocelyn Herman Secchio.
Wow, I should have come on here years ago. This is good for your ego. I have to say, I don't wear high heels anymore, Hillary. That was right, definitely.
Well, yeah, no, but you just always were so put together and confident. I was like, wow, look at her. It's kind of jealous, I have to say. A little jealous, a little envious, but you know, whatever. Then you move on. Then you get
older. Exactly. As you get older, you get less jealous. It's you realize what goes on behind the curtain.
Yes. So you were going to tell us how you were introduced to transformation. I mean, I didn't even know about it till after I was 30. I think in my young 30s, you were introduced at age 11.
Yes, 11. And it was really my mom who originally participated in a transformative seminar. And that was during a time when my parents were separated and they were going to get divorced. And when she did her first transformative seminar, she like became like a whole other person. It was unbelievable. She had gone from what I perceived as sort of like meek and the victim in the divorce kind of situation to this powerhouse who was just saying, I'm going to do this and I'm doing that and doing it, you know, not just saying it, but actually doing it. So then like a year later, my dad participated in the same program and they ended up getting back together. And they just are celebrating their 65th year together this year, which is kind of amazing. But I'm clear that transformation was the reason that I have the family that I have. So at that point, I was like, well, do they have it for kids? And they said, sure. So I went right in with my little sister and never stopped since. You know, I loved it so much.
Wow. And what difference do you think it made in your life? I know you were telling me a little bit about it.
But. Yeah. Well, I can tell you at that age, you know, before I did my first transformative work, I played tennis and I loved tennis. I played like every day after school and it was like my little obsession. And one day I went to tennis club and Hillary Adler, her name was, was there from my school. And she was like the best athlete that you ever saw in your, and I was not the best athlete. I was not like naturally athletic, but she was like this ad for athletes, you know, and I saw her and I saw her playing tennis and I said, I am never going to be as athletic as Hillary Adler. So I quit tennis. So that was before I did any transformative work, right? Yeah. So then I do this thing at like 11 or whatever it was. And then I fell in love with basketball. So I started playing basketball and I tried out for the basketball team and I didn't make it on the basketball team. Now that's a whole other story, but I'm not going to get into. But the point is that instead of going down for the count and giving up basketball, I said, well, if I can't get on this basketball team, I'm going to play basketball regardless. And my mom and I found a boys team that I ended up getting onto and playing with this boys team on the weekends. And then I still played like every day in the schoolyard. And I ended up making it on the basketball team the next year without even trying out. So that's just like a snippet of an example of what I call being unmessable with, no matter what life throws at you, including not making it on the basketball team. So it's not about rosy, you know, rainbows and sunshines. It's about how do you respond to life, even in the face of what I would call difficult circumstances. At 12, that's a difficult circumstance. But then now flash forward to grown-up life, you know, when your husband gets fired or when your mother has a stroke or when you have a mammogram that doesn't go as well as you thought it was supposed to go. You know, all those kind of circumstances, how do you be unmessable with no matter what? And still be able to fulfill on what matters to you. So that's kind of like where that whole journey began.
Wow.
Yeah. Cool, right?
Yeah. I'm thinking about tennis. Why didn't you go back to tennis? No, because I played tennis.
But did you really? Well, the funniest thing is
like, no, jammed fingers. That's all basketball.
Right, I did jam quite a few fingers, broke a couple of noses. But, you know, the funniest thing is Hillary Adler ended up doing the last online course that I read, that I did, that I led. And I was like, Hillary Adler. And I shared that story because every time I see her on Facebook, she's like climbing mountains and
rappelling.
She's still the most athletic person I've ever seen in my life.
Oh, that's hysterical that she did your course. Wow.
Yeah.
All right. So back to you. So there you were, and you were talking about a specific dream, which I bet a lot of kids have, and you actually fulfilled it. So why don't you tell us about that? Because that's very
cool. It feels like 10 lifetimes ago and it feels like 5 minutes ago. But when I was a little kid, like 4 or 5, I loved singing. It was like my passion. I would sing to stuffed animals. I would sing to anybody who was like, you know, would listen to it. And stuffed animals were sort of a captive audience. And my father had been a painter and he had stopped painting. And I noticed that he wasn't painting anymore. So when I was 5 years old, I was sitting in the back of our Chevy Impala convertible and he's smoking a cigar because I don't know, people smoke cigars back then. He's smoking a cigar. And I said to him, how come you gave up painting? And he said, well, you don't do your art as your career. Right. So that seemed very matter of fact. But for me at 5, in the infinite wisdom of 5, I made that the truth. Like, you don't do your art as your career. So I grew up inside of goals to be a lawyer or a business person or whatever. Right. And I would do singing like on the side. So then when I was, you know, 19 or 20, I was in a transformative workshop yet again, right, where these epiphanies happen and life alters forever. And I saw somebody was saying something. I wasn't even like at the mic. I was just listening. And all of a sudden that moment in the Chevy came back to me. And I was like, wait a minute, maybe that's not the truth, that you don't do your art as your career. Now, it seemed like the truth to me because I had spent a lifetime gathering evidence, and it wasn't hard to gather evidence for you don't do your art as your career with all the starving artists in New York where I lived, you know. But it started to loosen its grip. It was like, maybe that's just a decision I made at 5 and then kept building a case for it, you know. So it just sort of became malleable. Right. And I was in a seminar a few weeks later that was the follow up to this course. And the seminar leader asked people, so what'd you get out of the course? So I raised my hand, of course, like a good participant. And I share what I just shared with you about it becoming loose and malleable. And she says to me, well, so do you want to declare anything? I was like, absolutely not. Like, I'm thinking, no, I was like, I'm just telling you what I got. Like, what are you talking about? Don't push me, woman. And she was such a stand for me to fulfill that dream much more than I was. I still had a bunch of considerations about it, you know, and I was pretty successful at that time. I mean, I was making a lot of money. I was producing commercials at a very young age. So like, I was like protecting this life that I had built at like 20. And she would not let up. She just stood there and stood. And she said, well, you know, what are you declaring? And I knew if I said anything in that room full of people, because they were all like really committed people, I'd have to act on it.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So, yeah. You know, like here I have the awareness, like you say, right. Yeah. And I have the acceptance, but now action's going to have to, and I didn't want to act on. So it was like, I don't know, you and I are of a similar generation, but mm-hmm. do you remember Happy Days, that TV
yeah.
show?
Yeah.
Do you remember how Fonzie couldn't say he was wrong? And he'd be like, that's what it felt like to say I was a singer. It felt like I'm a loser, you know, like, or I'm a starving artist. And I did not want to identify as a loser or a starving artist. So it was like everything for me to say I was a singer. So I don't know what happened, like, you know, Exorcist or something. All of a sudden I hear this voice, and it was my voice, but it was like not my voice, saying yeah. I'm a singer, like a declaration with no evidence. And I didn't know what, I was like, who said that? And now what do I do? And, you know, and she was like, okay, so now use the seminar to fulfill that. And I was just like, what are you talking? And I sat down like in a daze, like in shock, but I found myself in action around being a singer. Cause I started to just, I made a promise. I'm going to introduce myself now as a singer, not as a producer. So I did that. At first it felt like a lie. It was like, I'm a singer, but I also produce television, you know, like I had to like justify it. I'm not a complete loser, you know, because I had those two things conflated.
Singer and loser.
It was like yeah, the same yeah, yeah. thing. But as I was introducing myself that way, it started to separate. And within 3 months, I had a record deal.
Whoa.
I know. It was like magic.
Did you even have a band? How'd you get the
No,
band?
I didn't have a band. I didn't have a demo. But, you know, as I started introducing Whoa. Myself to people as a singer, they'd go, oh, where do you sing? And then I was like, oh, I guess I have to schedule a show. So, Shower. Like, I'd schedule a show. And,
Shower.
And I did at that point. But I started taking the actions that a singer would take. I scheduled a show. I promoted it. I invited people. I made a demo. I mean, I knew tons of artists, you know, it wasn't like I had a shortage of resources. I just wasn't making requests or taking action. And without action, nothing happens. So then I'm, you know, doing all this. And then a girlfriend of mine who was not a great singer, but it was a good actor and dancer. She auditioned for this group and she wasn't right for it, but she goes, you know, but my friend is a singer. Now this is only because I started introducing right. myself as a singer. Right. So I get this phone call from this woman, I'll never forget her name. I'll say her name is Leslie, but she said, hi, you know, we're putting together a female version of New Kids on the Block. This is how long ago this was. New Kids on the Block. And we're looking for a singer. And I got your name from Felice. And I was literally like, who is pranking me now? Like, am I on some radio show where they're, you know, going to say, ha ha, sucker. And she goes, are you interested? And again, like Fonzie, I didn't even know what to say. And I go, yes, of course, you know, pretending not to be completely in shock. And she goes, okay, well, you know, all the girls are teenagers. And now you have to understand, I was a 20-year-old, but like you said, I was wearing high heels. I was with a suit. I was running a company, you know, so I had not one pair of sneakers or jeans. You know, I was old for my age since I was 12. Mm-hmm. So she goes, you know, there's 12-year-old, there's a 14-year-old, there's a 16-year-old. I'm thinking to myself, I'm never going to be able to do. She goes, so can you come in and meet with us? I said, sure. I immediately went out with my mom and bought jeans and sneakers and tried to like look my age, you know, and I auditioned. I played my demo. I didn't even have to sing. And we just had a conversation. And then I got the phone call the next day that they picked someone else.
Hmm.
That they picked a younger girl. They wanted to have more youth in the thing. And I was like, okay. And here's another example of being unmessable with, right? In that moment, I was like, all right, well, thanks for considering me. Got off the phone. And I said, okay, what actions do I need to take to fulfill this dream? And I started making a list of who I knew in the record business and, you know, all this action, right? The next day, I'm out to lunch with a friend of mine planning a charity event. And I'm out for like a 3-hour lunch. This is back before cell phone, you know, like we didn't have cell phones in the early 90s, right? So I'm like, you know, out for lunch. I come back to my office. There's like 15 messages from my agent at that point. And I was like, what on earth could this person want? And I call back and they said, they changed their mind. They want you.
Now, how did you get an agent? Now, can I just back up? Because yeah, how sure. did you at 19 years old have a production company?
So like, I didn't have one. I worked for one.
Oh, you worked. So you got a job at one.
Yes. And I was running it by the time I was 19 and a half.
When did you start there?
18.
Wow.
Yeah. I started as the receptionist. And once again, did a transformative workshop at that time.
Yes.
And I saw, you know, as I had all this uncertainty around my job, and I was like, well, I'm worried about getting the next paycheck. How about if I have the company Take be really over. Successful and not have to worry about my next pay? And that's what I did. And within 7 months, I was signing the checks and running the company.
How many people?
We outsourced most of it. It was an animation production company. So there were like 3 or 4 of us that worked there, but then it was, you know, dozens of people for every project.
Wow. That's amazing. Yeah.
Yeah. I sometimes forget about that.
Transformation works, right?
It does. I mean, there's never been a situation in my life that wasn't transformable.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, at least not yet.
Yeah. All right. So you get you get all these messages, they change their mind. And then what?
And then I signed the record deal and went to England to record the first song and then most of the album. And I mean, you know, it was 5 years I was in that group. We traveled the world. We ended up being the number one song in America for weeks at a time. But we were right before us was Whitney Houston with I Will Always Love You for like 100 weeks. She was the number one song. You know, it was like this thing, like it was never going to be. And we were the next number one. So I like to say we kicked Whitney Houston out of the number one spot.
That's amazing.
It was a miracle, a dream come true. Yeah. And that's really where my passion to have people's dreams come true really got birthed, because I was like, I've had every dream I ever had come true. Now, what do I want to have my life before is to have other people be not just, I still have dreams that come true all the time, but to empower other people to fulfill on their dreams. Cause why not?
Right.
You know, nothing has to stop you.
Yeah. All right. So, and we're going to play that song before we take the little halftime break, but so after that, you sang for 5 years and then what?
Well, during
that time, your husband, did you meet him?
I met him on a blind date. My sister fixed us up on a blind date, but all during that time I was involved with transformation and I was getting trained to lead. I was leading seminars. I was leading courses. Obviously, why wouldn't I love transformation? Look at everything I got out of it, right?
While you were doing this 5-year thing around the world, how did that happen?
Well, right before that all happened, I started leading these 4-day programs. So it was Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and then a Tuesday evening. And what happened was that when I was in the group, the weekends were booked with gigs. So I shifted to supervising the courses when I couldn't lead them on the Thursday and Friday, because they could never get people to get off work. I was off work. So right. I stayed around it that way. I kept in my development. And then I had months at home because, you know, even though you have an album out, you're not like traveling all the time unless you're on tour. I would lead courses, you know, like 10 times a year or sometimes a little bit more than that. And I was always involved with transformation. But then my sister said, I have a guy for you, right? And in this, now you have to understand, this was the year I had a number one record. So I was dating a little bit, like a lot, like, you know, 3 dates a day sometimes. I mean, yeah. I had a very active year of playing the field, so to speak, right? And it was great. I had fun. That's, you know, what I was doing. And then my sister said to me, okay, I have a guy for you. I was like, you know what? I'm taking a break. I don't really want to meet anybody right now. I'm sort of burnt out from all this dating. It's enough already, you know? So she was like, no, I have the guy for you. And I was like, all right, I'll have one cup of coffee with this guy. Cause my sister had never fixed me up with anybody. So I was like,
Where did she meet him? How did she know?
They were working together on a movie called IQ. with Walter Matthau.
Okay.
Uh-huh. And Meg Ryan.
And what did he do there?
He was a prop person. Okay. So his father was the prop master. He was the assistant prop master. And my sister was like an assistant location, whatever, something, whatever.
It's a different world. Yeah.
Yeah. And so I was like, all right, you know, I'll meet him. She goes, okay, hold on. And she puts him on the phone. I was like, are you joking me right now? So I was like, hi. And he goes, you know, I really want to talk to you, but I have to go back to work. Can I call you tonight? So I said, sure. And I'm so cynical at this point after all these dates. And I was just like, whatever. I go, sure, call me at 10 o'clock. Then I forget about it. Okay. And I go out to dinner with my cousin and I'm in yoga class or whatever. And I come home at 10:20. And this, again, no cell phones. This is like answering machine tape, right? And there's a message on my machine at 10 o'clock from a payphone on the side of a road.
Oh my God. It's him.
And he said, you know, I'm not back at my hotel yet, but I said I'd call you at 10. So I wanted to make sure that I called you at 10. And I'm going to call you in half an hour when I get back to my hotel. And I did a double take. And I was like, well, whatever that is, I want more of that. And that was it. Yeah. We spent hours on the phone that night, hours on the phone the next couple nights. And then we met on that Saturday. And that was what I say, my last first date. That's 28 years ago.
So he was in a hotel. Where was he?
Princeton, shooting that movie.
And you lived in New York and he lived in New York?
Yeah. I mean, he was in Princeton for a few months on the movie. When you're in the movie business, you kind of
travel. He didn't live in like Kentucky or
California. No. Yeah. Oh, no. Wow. He is a New Yorker through and through.
Wow. Nice.
Yeah. All right.
So then, let's see. We got a few minutes.
Okay.
So you come back, 5 years touring, la, 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 doing transformation. Then what?
So then, you know, he asked me to marry him a couple of times. I said no, because I had been married before and it didn't go very well. Okay.
What now? How old were you?
I was like 21 when I got married, and I was married for 4.5 years. And it was a chapter in my life where I learned a lot, but it was definitely not a good marriage. Mm-hmm. And some stuff happened and whatever. So the point is that I was committed to never being married again. Unless, because I was clear, I was not a good picker of husbands. So, because it didn't work out very well. And my parents begged me not to get married. And I was like, I'm doing it. You know, when you're 20, you think you know everything. Yeah. So anyway, I made a promise. Again, promising is very, I find promising to be one of the best tools in the world to create your life, right? So I promised I won't get married again, unless my parents approve.
Mm.
And I've been with the person for at least a year. So those were my criteria to safeguard against my own self, right? So then, you know, he had asked me to marry him. I said no. Then we were in Vegas and he said, let's go get married. I said no. But I really wanted to have a baby. And I was basically, even before I met him, I was thinking about who could I get, like, you know, as a donor, you know, because I'm going to have a baby in the next couple of years, whatever. So he got enrolled in the whole idea of having children with me. So we were living together. We were trying to have a child. We were unsuccessful at getting pregnant for months and months. And then we're sitting at lunch with my sister. And she says, why don't you guys get married? Like, what's your deal? And I said, we don't need a piece of paper to validate our relationship. And I'm justifying, you know, like we live together, we share bank accounts, we're trying to have a baby. We don't need the traditional societal blah, blah, whatever I was saying was all like blah, 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 blah. And she goes, that's your past talking. And she gets up to go to the bathroom in this restaurant. And I look at Michael and he looks at me and he says, will you marry me? And I said, yeah. Because in that moment, the awareness that it was my past had it disappear. It was no longer there as a block.
Mm.
And we got pregnant 2 weeks later. So whatever woo-woo stuff was in the space that's blocked, our, you know, who knows? But we got pregnant 2 weeks later and got married, you know, within a few months.
And now you have three beautiful children.
That's right. That's right. Who are older than my oldest is older than I was, I think, when I said yes. Frightening.
Yes. Yes. My son's about to turn 27. It's like, what? You were just born.
It's true. My daughter's 26 and a half, my oldest. And it's like yesterday she was in my belly.
Yeah. Yeah. Really.
Isn't it crazy? It goes by in 2 minutes.
Yeah. So, okay. So then now let's see, I'm watching the clock here. So, oh, we got 5 minutes. Okay. So from there, you got married, you had kids. And then what? Were you done with the singing?
I was done with the singing after I met my husband. I was still in the group when I met my husband, but then I wanted to have kids and I didn't want to be traveling around as much. So I decided to start a company that was about making people's dreams come true in the entertainment business. So I became a manager, and that was like natural for me because so many of my friends were artists and needed me. So I would have done it for free. I figured, let me make a company out of this. And I did. And I still have that company, you know, more than 25 years later. But that's how I started to really empower people, not just in the transformative seminar world, like leading seminars for people, but actually designed a company around people fulfilling their dreams. So my whole life became about dreams being fulfilled. And I started a nonprofit years later called United Global Shift, which was designed to cause systemic transformation, not just personal transformation. So I've been in this world of coaching people for more than 30 years and designing curriculum and designing programs that leave people in a new world with tools and actions that fulfill on their dreams now, not someday. You know, the biggest thing is disappearing that whole someday conversation.
Wow. So if somebody, like, let's say, I wanted to be an actress or a singer or whatever, like, what would you actually do?
Well, it depends on the person, but first I'd find out what your dream is, you know? Okay. And I do a whole process called a dream source discovery process, which people can do on my website. It's not just for actors. I mean, I do that for people. I actually did a TED talk about it. So it's about people getting connected to not their goal, you know, like winning an Academy Award or writing a book or something, but really what is the source of their dreams? Like, what is the purpose? Why do they, once they win the Academy Award, then what is going to be available that isn't available? So I get people connected to really who they are at that level, kind of source.
What's it called again? Dream source?
Dream source discovery.
Discovery. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The TED Talk was called Abracadabra, Making Your Dreams Real Now. But the discovery process that I, you know, have people go through is a 5-day thing. So it's, you know, it's definitely leaves people connected to something they weren't connected to beforehand. Mm. And so I find out from people what their dream is, like what are they, and then what are their goals? And then I look at their materials, you know, as a manager, and I say, okay, well, do they have what they need to be able to now take the next step? And if not, I advise them on their materials. Sometimes they have an agent or a publicist or whatever. Sometimes they don't. So I advise them on how to build their team. So a manager is different than an agent. An agent's job is like an employment agent. They get work, they get opportunities for work. A manager really is more like a coach, an advisor to help someone strategize, put together their materials, their team, manage the team of people that's causing their success and help them elevate their career to the next level in whatever areas. So that's what I do.
What materials? There's like a portfolio or a...
Well, it depends, like for you, let's say if you, what would be your, let's just take you, what would you want to do in the entertainment business? And then I can, I mean, you're an author, right?
Yeah. Well, let's say I wanted the show to go viral and have sponsors calling me to sponsor the show.
Perfect. So first I would look at, okay, what's your sizzle reel look like? Do you have like a sample reel of different episodes? What's your electronic press kit look like? Okay, these are all things you might need to get into.
Exactly. What is it, press kit?
An electronic press kit is a PDF. It's not complicated, but it's basically putting together quotes about you or photos or maybe stuff from people that you've interviewed or results that you've produced out of your interviews. You know, so it depends on what you're trying to pitch, you know, what's your reach, how many viewers do you have, how many downloads, you know, putting together a little fact sheet that you would then pitch to sponsors. So then we'd like look together, okay, well, what are the sponsors that are a natural fit? Like what kinds of companies would benefit from getting in front of your audience, you know, because do you have the demographics of your audience? Do you know, is it mostly female? Is it, you know, mostly over 30? Is it, you know, whatever? And then you would look at, okay, what companies are looking for those eyeballs to get like a very narrow kind of hit on their target audience and then start making phone calls, emails.
Wow. And how do you know how to do that? Just from being in the field?
I don't know if it's something you know. It's more like my experience of coaching people is I listen and I look. I don't like necessarily know. Now with actors, I know it's like, you know, it's like, okay, pretty much I could just give, and I wrote a book so that I wouldn't have to have 9 million meetings and say the same thing every single time, just to, you know, give it, listen, do this, then come back to me and I'll look and listen. But, you know, in the very beginning, there's some foundational things as an actor that you just need to do. You need to have a headshot. You need to have a resume. You need to have some tape on you. So, you know, it's not tape now, digital files on your performance, you know, or your singing or dancing or whatever it is. So I, you know, there's foundational things that are common to everybody. But somebody like you is different than that because you have a specific message. You have a specific show that you're looking to, you know, expand the reach of or expand the opportunity set of. So that's different. That's some of the work I love the best because then I get to customize, you know, what I see and what I hear is stopping you because the work that I do is all inside of what I call the art of being unmessable with. And I work with almost everybody I work with is very successful, but they experience being stopped or like a lid is there in certain areas of their life. So I work with them to see what's messing with them so they can disappear it and set themselves free in those areas.
Perfect.
Game on.
Game on. All right. I think we're there. So we're going to hear Jocelyn's song. We're going to hear my little commercial and my sponsor, Kikori's commercial. So roll it.
Are you inspired? Are you living a life story you are proud to tell? Are you actively pursuing and creating the life of your dreams? If not, you really need Hillary's AAA program for freedom. Just visit GettingRealWithHillary.com and schedule time with Hillary today.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. KIKORI.
Woo! So that was my daughter's voice. I always like hearing her because she's in Brazil right now. So anyway, that was so cool seeing that thing.
I haven't seen that whole video in a while. So.
What does that do for you when you watch it?
I wonder where those overalls are.
It was so cool. Wow.
Yes.
Was it fun?
It was a dream come true.
And who put it all together? You had a manager, a choreographer and all that stuff?
Well, the manager put together the group and then the record company hired a videographer, choreographer, stylist, all that kind of stuff.
That is, I couldn't stop smiling. Wow. Woo!
So I know, it's wild. It's wild to think that that was more than 30 years ago.
Wow.
Crazy.
Just so much fun, you know? Yeah. It's like everybody's dream, and there you were doing it. Woo! Okay.
Yeah, and I still stay in touch with most of those girls. You know, two of the three girls and I are still very close. In fact, one of them was just at my daughter's wedding in June. She's got three kids of her own, and she was one of my very first client as a manager. I took her on. She was the beginning of my management company. The one with the long, dark hair.
Oh, okay.
Her name is Ruth Ann. Yeah, she's
like and were they sister. As young? Obviously, you started.
I was old. I was the oldest.
But were they 12 when they started? They didn't look
that young. She was 14 when she started. At the time we did that video, she might have been 15 or 16. Okay. But the others were 17 or 18, you know, not much. They weren't out of their teens, let's put it that way. Yeah. So I was the only one who was not a teenager.
Wow. Well, how fun. Okay. Woo. So that's so cool. Okay. So back to you. So there you are. You're a manager. You're having people live their dreams, right?
Yeah. Producing films, you know, I mean, just kind of doing a bunch of stuff. And in my view, having it all, having everything work, you know, and, you know, I was at a company for 30 years leading and designing, and I completed there about a year ago. And, you know, I gave them a year's notice and I was like, it's time for the next chapter of my life. And, you know, I had been during the pandemic, my youngest child had dealt with some substance abuse issues and had to go to rehab and then a therapeutic boarding school. And during that time, she, who had been born as a boy, came out as trans and wanted to shift her identity to a woman or girl, I guess, you know, because she was 15 or something. So during that whole time when she was away, that's when I decided to complete at that company. You know, I love every single minute of everything I ever did there. And I still send people there. And I think it's the greatest base for transformative work. But it was time for me to move on. And my parents are now 91 and 89. And I was, you know, starting to take a little bit more care of them and spend more time with them. So I gave a year's notice and I completed. And then I said, okay, I'm going to take 3 months and didn't do nothing, but kind of see what I want to do. In addition to my entertainment company, because I still have that and I'm still, you know, I have 120 clients there. So I took a month, I planned my daughter's wedding. I took a month, I went to Paris, which is my favorite place in the whole world. And then I took a month and started, you know, delving into stock trading because I had hired a coach in that area and I wanted to get good at that. And I really love it. And then when I came back, I was like, okay, so I'm either going to write a book called The Art of Being Unmessable With, or I'm going to write a course, because that's what I do. I write courses, you know, I design them. So I was like, let me just do a course. And then people started calling me about one-on-one coaching, which I had always done sort of a little bit, but never really expanded. So all of a sudden I'm coaching people one-on-one. I have like a beta test version of this Foundation for Being Unmessable with course that I did in October. And that's, you know, going well. And then I said, okay, I think I'll do a group. So I'm just now creating as I go what I want to do. And I just joined forces with two people who I admire more than I can't even, they're like mentors of mine. So much like if I look back, even the word unmessable with, the first time I heard it was from one of these guys. And now we're doing a partnership with businesses to go in and have companies be able to design their company from their true calling.
Wow.
And yeah. Which I'm like, oh, you got to be kidding me. I am like living the life of my dream again. And my husband and I just decided to move to Paris part-time. So we are, as of May 1st, we're going to be there a month, here a month with my parents, then there, and we're, you know, just risking it and just going for it.
Wow. Now, along the way of this dream life, just so people can relate, was there ever a time when you were stuck? Was there ever a time when it wasn't so easy, when you thought maybe I should give up, like in anything like that? Or was it just always easy?
No, I'm just it's not easy. It's simple, but it takes work. I mean, this takes discipline to live this kind of life. It takes, you know, saying things and then doing what you say, not what you feel or what your mood is telling. I mean, it takes discipline. It takes structure. It takes having coaches. I have coaches up the wazoo because I'm committed to having a great life. So anytime you're committed to excellence, get a coach. Look at Olympic athletes. You know, you don't just kind of, if I'm not committed to breaking through something or having something move to the next space, I don't get a coach. You know, if it's like, I'm okay with the way things are, a status quo, I just, you know, kind of, I can self-manage that stuff. Yeah. So I've had a million horrible things. I mean, my brother died, you know, my mother had a stroke, then she broke her pelvis, she has dementia. I mean, I had deal with difficult circumstances, my daughter having dealt with all that substance stuff. I mean, you know, stuff happens all the time. I'm a real human being, but I have a place to stand to deal with it. So I don't get thrown too often. And when I do, it's for a matter of hours. And then I find myself, I have something to go back to. Like I've developed enough muscle.
Yeah. So give an example. I mean, your brother, how did your brother die?
He died of AIDS.
Oh, okay. Mm-hmm. All right. And, so let's take that. Terrible. How do you not go down the tubes? I mean, just tell us your process so we can.
Sure. Well, first of all, while he was alive, and I knew he was going to, I mean, you know, it was pretty much obvious he was going to die. I said to him, I was in communication. So I didn't hide how I was feeling. I didn't, you know, suppress all my fears or consider. I just talked to him and I said, you know, I'm really afraid you're going to die. And he said, I am going to die. So that's what's so, right?
Yeah.
So accepting that. And he goes, but I'm not afraid. And I want you to know I've had a great life. And I've fulfilled on what I wanted to fulfill on in my life. And you don't need to be afraid. So in that moment, I was like, okay, if I'm going to be afraid, it's going to dishonor his request, which is that I don't be afraid. And I want to honor my brother. So I just said, okay, I'm no longer going to be afraid. I'm just going to be with you while I'm with you. And then the night before he died, I was going to go visit him in the hospital because he had been in the hospital for a while. And I remember this really altered a lot in my life. I said, you know what? I'm going to go tomorrow. It's getting late. I'm going to go tomorrow morning instead. And as I was walking out the door the next morning, I got the phone call that he had just passed. And that was the moment where I was like, there is no someday. And I am never going to do that again. I am never going to wait for someday to do something because it's not real. And so that was, you know, a transformative moment for sure in my life. But I remember a few months later, I was on a bus and it's like going someplace I don't remember. And I started to have thoughts like, oh, you know, such a tragedy that he died and nobody should bury a child. You know, like I'm having all these kind of thoughts, right? And I'm not like trying to think them. They're just there. Right. And then I was like, wait a minute. Who says nobody should bury a child? People bury children all the time. And this isn't honoring his memory for me to be all like, this is so messed up and da 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 da. And it just snapped. I was like, no, I'm just going to honor my brother and treasure and celebrate the difference he made for me. And he was a teacher for all his students. I mean, you know, and everybody he ever interacted with, he was just, you know, so special. And that's how I honor my brother, not by mourning him. I mean, I was sad, obviously. And I, you know, was hysterical for about an hour when I found that I got into a cab, went to the hospital, you know, like crazy person. But that passes if you don't resist it, if you just allow yourself to experience whatever you're going through. And then I was able to really use his life as an inspiration for me, for my kids who never met him, for, you know, people at his funeral. I spoke at his funeral. And, you know, I remember I said, this is so long ago, but I remember I said, you know, people like Bruce never die because they live in our conversations about the difference they made with us. Mm. You know, so that's an example.
Wow. Wow. Yeah. All right. So give us another one.
Sure.
And someone like their father had died and they told me, you know, I didn't suffer. I felt the pain, but I didn't allow myself to have the story because the story is where we suffer.
It's actually in, something it's not like in that. The, yeah, it's,
so I don't know me, that I'm saying it right, but
I'll give you the distinction right now. Okay, so it's never what happened that causes us to suffer. What happened happened.
Right.
And it's not really the story that causes us to suffer because, you know, if you've ever read, I don't know, Cat in the Hat, you know, the fish comes out of the bowl in that story, but you're not like worried about the fish suffering over this fish because you know it's a story.
Right. Okay.
But when you collapse what happened and the story about what happened, kind of like I did with you can't do your art as your career, that's when you suffer because you're not dealing with reality. So
you're
like
not aware that it,
that's I was just going to go back to. So like you say, awareness, acceptance, action, you can't really have effective action if the foundation you're on is unreal, like not true and just kind of shaky foundation. So when you separate those two things and you get clear about what happened or what's happening right now, right? And then what you're adding to it, like sometimes the drama or the regret or the shoulds or shouldn'ts, it shouldn't be happening. I mean, that shouldn't be happening is not out here in reality. It's totally constructed.
Right. Like you could have said, I should have gone and tortured yourself for the rest of your life.
Exactly. And people do.
Yeah.
And people do. Yeah. And it's sad because, I mean, it's not like, I don't mean to sound flippant, but suffering is optional. And I have worked with people who have had bad stuff happen to them, like being raped or watching their child be raped. I mean, bad stuff with my nonprofit that I've worked with people. And it's never what happened that has them suffer. It's always what they've added to it, either the should, the shouldn't, the guilt, the regret, exactly. And when they free themselves from that, then they can powerfully respond to what's happening, which I call being unmessable with. Because if you're reacting to something, and mostly what you're reacting to is what you're adding, you know, like they don't love me or whatever you're adding to whatever happened. If you're in reaction mode, you can't really be in creation mode. And that's one of the biggest things I work with people on is where are they reacting at what life is throwing them versus where are they standing in what they're creating and fulfilling on their vision.
Wow.
Yeah, that got a little heavy, I know, but you know, the rape thing.
No, it's good.
Help right. people deal with that stuff.
I mean, and that's why I like people to tell their stories so that other people who may be experiencing the same thing can say, okay, if she did it, then I can do this and let me use, you know. So what was, let's see, how are we doing? We got, okay, another, one more quick story about like where, you know, you could have been stopped and you didn't.
I'll tell you one where I was stopped for a long time instead of one where it's just a few hours. Okay. So my father-in-law, who was like 5'6", Italian, he talked like this, you know, everybody called him Little Napoleon. That was sort of his reputation, was that he was a very difficult guy. And I had this idea, like I could get along with anybody, you know, give me a break. But when I met him, we like clashed. And I would try to, get it, but it never clicked. It was like, no matter how many years of muscle I had in transformation, I could not get this relationship to work. And it was frustrating, but at some point, Michael just kind of stopped seeing his father a lot because he was like protecting me. And, I had plenty of evidence. Everybody agreed with me that he was difficult. His brothers didn't even talk to him. I mean, it was like the truth that he was just this jerky guy, right? So then one day I'm yet again in the back of the room in a transformative seminar, right? Thank God for all these transformative seminars and the work that I've done. And I realized that I really love my life. Like I have this life of my dreams, and it's because of Michael, Michael and transformation. If it weren't for those two things, I wouldn't have the life I have. And I'm like moved to tears at how much I love my husband and how his whole life is about making sure my life works, my parents, my kid, everybody. This is like his life is about this. And I'm like weeping a little bit, like, those kind of being moved tears. And then all of a sudden it occurs to me that Tommy is his father. And this was like shocking, like bad news, because I'm very logical. And if Michael's the source of my great life and Tommy is his father, you could say by the laws of syllogism that Tommy is the source of my great life.
Wow.
And in that moment, I was crying in a different way, like at the loss of what a creepy, disgusting, judgmental daughter-in-law had been for 10 years. 10 years I was being right about this guy. And it wasn't like I was like being right. I was right. I mean, and everybody agreed. So it was really real.
So what did you do?
I called him.
Wow.
But I was so afraid. First, I had to call Michael because I didn't have his number. That's how close we were.
Right.
And I was like, and I told Michael what I saw and everything. And he was like, well, don't get me involved in your breakthroughs. Okay. I do not want to be involved in this because he had his own stuff with his dad.
Right.
So I get the number and I'm shaking, dialing the number. I had to do it like a couple times to get the number. I don't know if this has ever happened to you. Maybe I'm the only one where I'm like terrified. Yeah. Like he's going to come through the phone and kill me or something. And I was like, hi, Tommy, it's Joss. And he goes, who? More evidence for what a creepy guy. And I go, it's Jocelyn, your daughter-in-law. He goes, what happened? What's wrong? Because I hadn't talked to him in a long time, like over a year. So maybe something happened to the kids or whatever. I said, everybody's fine. He goes, then why are you calling? And I'm like, see, this guy is just a jerk. And I was like, well, I'm calling for a few reasons. Do you have a few minutes? He goes, depends. What are the reasons? And I'm just like, every step along the way, I'm let me just go back to my old story, right? But I pushed through and I kind of chickened out and I said, well, one is to wish you a happy Father's Day, because it was Father's Day. It was actually Father's Day, which was another freaky thing. He goes, what's the other? And that was the moment of I had to have 3 seconds of courage, right? And I was either going to chicken out or I was going to grow a set. And I said, all right, I'm going for it. I said, I'm calling to apologize for something. He goes, I'm listening. And I said, I'm calling to apologize for being a creepy, nasty, judgmental daughter-in-law for the last 10 years. And I want you to know that today I saw that you're the source of my great life. And he's like, what are you talking about? And I said everything that I said about Michael and everything. And he goes, and I go, and I've been dishonoring you for a decade. And it ends now. And what you can count on me for is to be a loving and appreciative daughter-in-law, no matter what. And then there's like silence, right? And I go, hello. He goes, nobody ever called me a good father. I thought Michael turned out good by mistake. And I said, you are every reason why Michael turned out the way he did. My husband and I were both adopted, but you adopted him. You got him sober. My husband's 32 years sober and Tommy brought him to rehab. You got him sober. You gave him a career in the film business. You taught him how to be a human being and he's the best human being I know. And you did that. And then he starts like sharing with me. I was like, who is this person? And we're getting to know each other. And then towards the end of the call, I said, yeah, if you could have anything, what would you want? He said, I want a relationship with my son. I said, done. But that took 3 seconds of courage to alter the future forever. And 5 years ago, maybe it's six now, he died in a plane crash. But when we got the news, although it was shocking, we were complete. It was clean. He knew how much we loved him and we knew how much he loved us.
Wow.
So that's, stories cost.
I feel it. I'm like feeling the energy, right? Wow.
So, every time I'd be right about something, I just look, okay, what is it costing me? is it worth it? You know? And normally it isn't. It's not worth it.
Wow. Whoa. Well, bring it right into the end. Okay, Jocelyn, you can find her at www.theartofbeingunmessablewith.com. Jocelyn Herman Saggio, thank you so much for a quick and unbelievable hour. So thank you.
Anything thank you for having me. Yeah, I just want to thank you for the opportunity to be with you. It's so good to see you, you know, and I feel like we're like a color advertisement right now between your blue and my
right.
orange. But it's so good to be with you. And I'm so happy that you're doing this and making the kind of difference that you're making for people to live the life of their dreams, because that's all I want.
That's right. We got the same mission. Yeah.
That's right.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Getting Real with Hillary show. We hope you were entertained and inspired. Please subscribe to Hillary's newsletter. Go to gettingrealwithhillary.com for more freedom techniques and fantastic stories and links to other great stuff. And don't forget to tune in every week on Tuesdays at 1 p.m. Eastern Time on BBS Radio TV. And let's get real. Let's get connected. Let's get inspired and create that life you love.